سأقول مسجون دمشق سقطت
الذي يعمل على تهويتها بقوة.
Revolutions. 5 minutes past 10. Where do you think you're going to live for the future? We live in revolutionary times, and one of the greatest revolutions that we're experiencing is in housing. Are you going to be one of those that what we call is age in place, a phrase I must say I'm not yet quite used to? Are you going to live in a retirement village? And what does a retirement village of the future look like? Are you going to stay at home or start up a share house in your 80s or whatever it might be, which is apparently very much the go? Share facilities, maybe even employ some sort of a concierge or common carer, but maintain your independence. What does it look like, the house of the future, in particular as we age? Well, Emily Mullane is a researcher at Per Capita. She's becoming an expert in this. It's a think tank where she's written a report about housing needs of the future. She's here to take your calls, and as we so often learn when we talk about our revolutionary times, the sorts of things that you, the listeners, are doing are way ahead even of where the government policies are or even the think tanks might be. So you tell us, what's happening in your neck of the woods, in your family, in your personal arrangements? What are you intending to do? What are you going to do as you get older? 1300 222 774. 1300 222 774. Emily, I saw a van the other day as we were travelling around on the long weekend with that fabulous bumper sticker, which you might have seen, which is to grow old disgracefully and all of those sorts of things. And adventure before dementia is another one. And I, in fact, do know some people who are pretty much selling everything they own and saying, well, we'll just travel till the money runs out and then work out what to do then. All sorts of variations on that theme.
And it's increasingly become a comment when you look through the research around the baby boomer cohort that the whole idea that we need to leave a huge chunk to our kids, whether it's through our housing equity or other parts of the estate, is just not as big a concern as it might have been among previous generations. And as a Gen Y, that concerns me to put that to one side. But just looking at this question of downsizing, because it's been a real policy focus among, this government. Previous government had a pilot scheme where pensioners were able to have means test relief.
What's that meant?
So if you sell up the home and
you've
got
the big family home, you raise
family
the kids,
home,
all the rest
raise
of it,
kids, yep. Decide that you want to move to another property to downsize. So, and some fairly limited concepts around downsizing, but it means that you have less number of bedrooms than what you did before, that the sale of that house isn't going to affect your pension means test or the amount of pension that you're taking home.
Mm-hmm. Because if you stay in the big house, the house isn't taken into account for the pension means
Correct.
Test. If you sell it and stick half the proceeds in the bank and only spend half on something
then that's
else,
taken into account.
It is taken into account. That
under normal circumstances.
Yeah, it's unfair.
But the pilot scheme said, okay, we're going to quarantine that and say that you'll get the same pension. The interesting part about it was that the people who took up the scheme, it was very few. There was really muted interest in the scheme. And it contradicts the kind of approach to policy in this area, which says, well, if we give someone a rational carrot, then they're going to take that up and they're going to sell up the home and downsize. It didn't work.
No.
And we did a focus group for the purpose of the report with the Council on the Aging and asked people, why didn't you take up the scheme? Or if you'd known about it, why wouldn't you have? And they said, well, I like where I live because I like my garden. I like my neighbourhood. I like my neighbours looking out for the house when I'm not around. And all these kinds of, if you like, in an economic sense, fluffy reasons, but they're very real reasons why people don't take up these sorts of schemes.
So they're the intangibles, but they're the ones that seem to influence people. So Are you looking at a granny flat? Are you downsizing? Are there retirement villages? Are there variations on the theme? Might it be a ageing share house that is going to float your boat in the future? You tell us, what does housing look like in the future? We're living in revolutionary times, and one of the things that's changing is whether or not people continue with the practices of their parents' generation. Mm. Are you going to age in place? There's all sorts of government schemes and subsidies to assist people with that, because I think the thinking is, isn't it, Emily, that it's just basically cheaper to keep people at home rather than find them ending up in nursing homes.
Yeah, the cost of to the taxpayer, but also to the individual, of living in a residential style nursing home is far more than it is living in your home. But also, people want to live independently. People don't want to hit a certain age and go into a retirement village, because we've all heard the horror stories. For all that there are good nursing homes, we have heard the horror stories that go on in nursing homes. My mum, for one, has said that if it comes push to shove, I know what to do. She has to move into a nursing home. So,
but it used to
there's a policy in place.
There used to be a huge shift of people going to Queensland, for instance. As soon as you retired, sold up and moved to Queensland. And then we saw a whole bunch of people coming back from Queensland, for instance, to not just Melbourne but anywhere in Victoria, saying, well, that didn't work, couldn't stand it, got sick of playing golf and the fishing was no good anyway. Mm. And they all came back again. And so then there's golf course developments, there's coastal town developments, there's all these options designed to try and make money out of these demographic shifts. But no one's necessarily just come up with, it's not one size fits all.
It's not one size fits all. And I think one of the really important factors in that not one size fits all discussion is around people who are renting as they age. Around 15% of over 65s are renting at the moment in all forms of housing, but that's going to go up 115% by 2026.
Wow.
As we know, young people are not getting into the housing market. If nothing changes in our policy settings, they are going to continue renting throughout their lives. And if you're dependent on the age pension, you're taking home as a single person around $23,000 a year. Put in some Commonwealth rent assistance, you're up to around $25,000 a year. Now, if you're trying to pay private rental
with $500 a week to spend,
with that much a week
on your survival, yeah.
I don't think that you're going down to the RSL to meet your friends. I don't think that you're going out and doing things and participating in society because you're trying to put food on the table.
Yes, it's a very tight thing indeed. Emily Mullane from Per Capita, the think tank, is here. And Nigel from Cheltenham is first up. Good morning, Nigel.
Morning, John. I'm wondering if Emily and her organisation have looked into what's happening with overseas destinations with retirement and things like that. Because I know for a fact that a place like Chiang Mai in Thailand is now being looked at heavily by Japanese investors and European investors for their ageing populations, and obviously they're catering to people who would like a large amount of service as far as, say, nurses and doctors and things like that are concerned at a cheaper price.
Have you been to have a look?
I've been to Chiang Mai recently, but I was reading about it in the Thai newspapers that this is becoming quite a big business for them over there.
Oh, no doubt about it. Emily?
Yeah. We haven't looked at that specific example, Nigel, but we did look at some of the initiatives that are being undertaken in places like the Netherlands, where communal-style living, as we like to call it, the kind of older kibbutz-style living, where people live in smaller apartments on one side of the building, and then on the other side of the building you've got nursing services and other medical services which can come in and provide services to people in what looks for all intents and purposes like a normal apartment and is part of a setting in a community that also has younger people living in affordable housing near that development, so it's intergenerational living as well.
Would you contemplate living overseas, Nigel, just because it's cheaper?
Oh, well, actually, John, I'm already set up over in Thailand because I'm married to a Thai lady and have been for 20-odd years, so we've been planning our retirement for Thailand for quite some time.
Wow. Well, if you've got Australian assets and you can go and retire to Thailand, I guess you've done the maths.
Indeed, yes. Well, we've got Australian assets, but we've also got assets in Thailand that we've been purchasing over the last 20 years. So, as I say, we're pretty well set to move there anyway. But I just think that, obviously, they're concentrating on that area over there themselves, the Thai government and the authorities, and they see it as a lucrative opportunity to lure wealthier Westerners, for example, and Japanese to Thailand for their retirement.
Sure. Now, Nigel, I know some people who thought they'd retired to Bali until illness brought them back to Melbourne.
Well, don't worry, John. We'll be still keeping our private health cover going and travel insurance just in case, a serious emergency happens. But obviously, the facilities in somewhere like Bangkok and even in Chiang Mai for, what you might call upper-end hospitals are improving drastically as well.
I think that it goes without saying, Nigel, that this is an option for certain segments of Australian society, but there will be those people who don't, for example, have housing assets, who haven't owned the home, who haven't amassed a huge amount in superannuation, who are not going to be the market that can even contemplate these sorts of options. So I am concerned about the quality of life of people who have no choice but to age here.
Good on you, Nigel, and good luck. It sounds like you've got a plan. Mary in Glenroy. Hiya, Mary.
Yes, thank you. Good morning.
Welcome.
I'm a single 74-year-old pensioner, a three-bedroomed house in the western suburbs. Some structural problems in terms of knees and things, and I would need to have a ground floor unit. And how do I start research for looking for something like this without being sucked into all the real estate pressure systems?
How do you buy something new without a real estate agent?
Well, I don't want to get caught up in being drawn into, we can sell your house for this, that, and there's this, that, and the other, and all of the costs and stress and energy factors involved in all of that. I'm wondering if there was any sensible publication, and I have had some from the my aged care people who have been good, but I'm just wondering, is there general advice?
I think in terms of general advice, that they're a good place to start. The other group which is linked with the My Aged Care website is, of course, the Council on the Ageing, and that group and National Seniors, they'd be the two groups that I would start with for a port of call, and if they couldn't provide you advice, they could certainly direct you to where that would be.
I totally share your concern, Mary, because it's such a viper's nest that you have to get into once you talk real estate, isn't it?
Well, and also because I'm in a group where so many of us are needing to downsize in homes that, you know, certainly require maintenance, if not
You don't want to spend the money to fix it, no.
Well, and there's a huge bunch of us out there that are in competition.
Yep, yep. Look, I wish it was as easy as giving you a simple answer, Mary. Unfortunately, I don't know that there is one, is there, Emily?
I don't think there is, unfortunately. And one of the issues that comes up time and again is the lack of desirable, affordable housing options in areas near to where you live, perhaps, or near to where you want to be living and where your doctor is and where services are that you need. And what we have at the moment, unfortunately, in Australia is a housing supply issue, and this plays into that. So I don't have any hard and fast answers, unfortunately.
But Mary, sooner rather than later, because certainly I think we see this over and over again, don't we, Emily? If people leave it too late, it gets harder and harder.
Yeah, and that's in fact something that I've looked at in the research, is that when you speak to people, they say, who have moved, and they've moved later in life, and I mean by later in life, in your 80s or beyond, they say, we wish we'd done it earlier.
Over and over again, you hear that. Mary, good luck.
Is there part of the research that would be useful to lay people?
Absolutely. You mean the paper that I've released?
And how can we have access to that, please?
Yes, that's available on the Per Capita website for free to download.
Are you on the internet, Mary?
Yes.
So go to Per Capita, P-E-R.
Yes.
CAPITA, per capita.
.org.au.
And that's the think tank that Emily works for, and she's written a paper about exactly this, which is why she's here.
Thank you.
Good on you, Mary, and good luck. Another Mary in St Kilda. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, John.
Welcome.
Thank you. A bit nervous. I'm one of those asset-rich, cash-poor people.
Mm-hmm. You're looking, most of people.
looking to retire in the next couple of years and wanting to stay in St Kilda. I've been here for 35 years. I bought my house when no one wanted to live in St Kilda. And it doesn't...
But this is your chance to escape, Mary.
I love it.
Yes, I can see why.
My house doesn't match other houses on the market in terms of I haven't had the money to do the updating that people expect in today's real estate market. I don't have the capacity to live in a two-story anywhere with stairs. And most of the larger blocks with lifts are rabbit warrens. To move from a small house with a garden, which with limited mobility is a godsend for me, because it's just outside my back door, to move into a rabbit warren where you don't know your neighbours. I know all my neighbours all around me. It's a real quandary. I've been looking at this for the last 10 years, and quite honestly, I've just about given up, because in order to make the move, what I can buy with my money makes me move to still very pleasant areas, but right away from the beach and right away from all my activities, which would mean travel, which I can't do. So I think I'm not an untypical example.
And I think, Mary, I'm going to agree with you, and rather than providing... The issue is that there are no solutions to this at the moment. And as you say, it's not a new issue. This housing issue has been around for some time, around people either wanting to stay where they are, as the language goes, age in place, but certain elements of their home are not suited to them as they age. And for whatever reason, they may not be able to retrofit the home with things so that they can age well in place, nor can they afford to move to areas where they want to be living. So the solutions are kind of twofold. They're not there at the moment, but as I see them, it's around enabling people to age in place well through providing, for example, government grants to do retrofits on your home. And then it's about developing the new housing stock. Exactly.
Mary, you are not alone if it makes you feel any better.
Yeah, one point I'd like to add in there, which is very key, is that developers want to make money. They maximise every inch of space to build on. They don't build for what the community needs.
No, well, that's absolutely right. They're not community-minded. They're just looking to make a buck. Good on you, Mary. Some text messages, Emily. Cruise ship living... Well, that's not for the faint-hearted. Container home estates. Okay. I'm 68. I'd like to live in intentional housing. I live on the coast at Aries Inlet. Can envisage intergenerational rentals, small cottages with shared gardens and a common centre. Yep. Just give me a couple of million to buy the land. I'll do the development, says Gabrielle. The developers don't have the imagination to do it, so maybe I should. Interesting. Checked out a two-bedroom unit in a retirement village. It was about half the value of our home, but the outgoings were outrageous and the contracts removed many of the rights that you have as a homeowner. Mm. Signed anon. Mm. Heard that before, I'm sure. Tell Nigel from Cheltenham we already have a natural overseas retirement system. It's called Tasmania, ha-ha, says Jan. And... stop implying going to a nursing home is a choice. It's for people who need constant care and you have to be assessed to go there. Sorry, I was talking more about what was in your mind about what your future may hold rather than saying people would simply choose to go down that path. Betty from Burwood, good morning and thanks for waiting. You're through to Emily.
Good morning. I really can't ever understand why so many people cling or want to have a pension if they've got enough money to live without it. It's something that's beyond my comprehension. I'm elderly myself, I did get to a stage where I had a health card, but then my income improved, so I don't get anything anymore. And I can live very comfortably. I don't have a lot of money, but obviously I have got enough if I don't get a pension. Why do people have to have a pension?
I absolutely acknowledge, Mary, that I think it goes to two parts what you're talking about here. The first is around people's expectations as they age around what's a sufficient income, and a valid question: are our expectations going up and up about our good lifestyle in Australia? We've had so many years of doing it well economically and successive years of income tax cuts that we are used to a certain lifestyle. But the second part...
I'm used to it too. Remember that? I've lived this life.
Mm.
And why can't people be content? I just don't understand it. And they need excessive money to live comfortably.
I think the second part, though, goes to superannuation and the accumulation of superannuation for people who are going to be ageing in future years. And Per Capita's done modelling around what people are likely to have as their take-home superannuation in the future, even on the basis that they are working until 70, which is a very generous assumption. And the modelling that we showed, showed that for a female who goes in and out of the workforce, when she gets to 70, she'll be taking home around $42,000 a year with a pension. But if she retires earlier at 60, she'll be taking home around $33,000 a year. And that's fine if you own your home. But if you're in private rental or if you've got debt or any number of other factors, you're at real risk of poverty.
Yes.
I'll tell you, if she's only got an income of $33,000, she'll get a pension.
And that's part of the issue.
That's a combined pension and super.
But if you've got an income over $50,000 a year, you don't get any help.
No,
and
but
you
people,
don't need it. Not well, a single person. You don't need it. You can live very comfortably
if you've got
you
a lot
own
of,
everything.
Betty, if you've got a lot of medical expenses
everything.
And those sorts of things, you suddenly find that you wish you could stretch your dollar a bit further. You don't want to be eating into your capital, and particularly these days with interest rates so low, people are saying, well, I'm not going to have as much income from what I thought was going to sustain me, and I'm not going to be able to get through any more when I thought I was going to. That's very common.
Well, I just don't quite follow all this. I just feel that people now, look, yes, if you've got a lot of expenses, and quite often that's what happens with us when we age, but if basically you have good health and you own everything, you have no debt, if you can't live comfortably for a single person and for a couple over $80,000 a year, there's something wrong with you.
All right.
You can travel, you can do everything on that.
Good to hear from you, Betty.
Okay.
I'm glad you've had your say. Jane in North Carlton. Good morning, Jane. Hello, Jane.
Just taking off my loudspeaker. Yes, well, look, I want to talk about something quite different. It's something called Homeshare Australia and New Zealand, which is a small, not-for-profit little group which has developed a wonderful model, and it's used internationally in the USA, France and parts of Europe. Mm-hmm. And it involves an old person who has a large house, capital in the house, but very little disposable income, who is frail and may need to move into a nursing home or something because they can't manage looking after their home. They match an individual, it's very often in Australia, it'll be an overseas university student, with this old person, draw up a very good contract.
Yep.
So that, you know, the obligations on both sides are clear. No personal care is involved, but they can help with, say, pruning trees, cutting grass,
sure.
Putting
I mean,
out garbage bins.
It's a sort of elaborate way of taking in some boarders and lodgers almost, isn't it,
Except
Jane?
You've got safeguards because neither can be exploited because...
How is that enforced or...?
They monitor them. They keep in touch with them and evaluate how it's going. So that you can't get the situation where, say, a person starts to dement and is kind of talked into leaving all their money to the border
concern.
Or whatever.
Or you can't get rid of someone when you want to.
Exactly. And for your information, this group is having an international congress in Melbourne in November this year, and I'd really urge interested listeners to look at their website.
Well, this is the sort of thing, Jane, where that's the reason why Emily's here, to explore some of these more innovative solutions people are experimenting with and see whether it gives people, I suppose, Emily, a chance to decide whether this is for them or not.
Yes, well, this is in a small way, but it's been very, very successful, and not only in Australia, and the Australian groups hosting the fourth International Congress in November. There'll only be about 100 people at it. It's a small show.
So are you doing it, Jane?
No, I'm not, but I've recently joined their committee.
Okay.
I'm a definite sidekick and a latecomer to it, but I just think it's a marvellous idea, which is why I've been supporting it.
Okay, well, good to hear from you. And Emily, I've got so many text messages. Mm. Oh, I love Betty's call. The amount of whinging you hear from older people who have had it so good. Annoying. And the government does assist older people with health issues. This lady is correct. Retirees need to be able to travel. Oh, yeah, business class to Europe. That's why they need a healthcare card and a pension. I know this is true. Thanks. Well, I don't think if you've got enough for business class and trips off to Europe all the time, you wouldn't be eligible for a healthcare card and a pension, would you? You shouldn't be unless you've arranged your affairs in a sneaky, underhand way, Emily. Yes, that's right. And Jerry says, what was that website again, please? Maybe she's one of your staffers, but either way, let's give it again.
It's percapita, P-E-R-C-A-P-I-T-A .org.au.
Which is the think tank that Emily Mullane works for. She's a research fellow. She's becoming an expert in housing options for an ageing population, something that's clearly excited lots of callers. And if you're one of those and you've not got through, well, I'm more than happy to have a chat to you about your lateral solutions, your revolutionary solutions to an ageing population and the intergenerational problems that everyone's talking about. Maybe on the open line just a few minutes from now. Plenty coming up after the news headlines, including more about Indigenous Australians and remote communities. Is it a lifestyle choice or not? And your calls, the open line, of course. Plenty after the news headlines with Tim Cunningham. Thank you, Tim.